That activity took the place of our reading, and so we'll therefore just skip on to the speakers of the day. And they were just here, and they're going to be coming back. So it is Annabelle and Patrick Neal, and it's Joe Boyd. These are of our own, Whoop's own, and they've been somewhere. They're going to tell you about it, starting with Patrick.
A fine dinner enjoyed, we stepped into the street, returning to our hotel. The full fury of Cindy causing us to double over, heads into the wind, torrential rain stinging our faces, clothing instantly soaked through. We stumbled into the lobby, pools of water forming wherever we stepped. The eve of the assembly proved to be a metaphor for the next 5 days. 5 days that, as Dickens wrote, were the best of times and the worst of times. In the Big Easy, a scant 100 yards from Old Man River, the problems and woes of a movement in crisis eddied together with the dreams and aspirations of a new day. Just like the river, GA kept flowing along, marked by joys and sorrows, heat and light, laughter and tears, hope and despair, all wrapped together, all just rolling with the river, rolling to the sea. GA can be a cruel mistress who will break your spirit if you let her, but she can make your soul soar if you let the spirit in. Let love shine in. More than 4,000 delegates and attendees, ministers and other religious professionals, youth and young adults, gathered in New Orleans, Louisiana, June 21st through June 25th for the 56th General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. My GA was all about 5 days of volunteering, meetings, worship, including a Christian communion service, singing, networking, seeing old friends, making new ones, multiple visits to the expo and the In Spirit bookstore, inspirational talks, endless reports, and eventually sheer exhaustion. I also attempted to eat as many oysters prepared as many ways as possible and then chase them down with an array of bread puddings, along with the whiskey sauces. Wolf was represented at this GA by five folks. Joe Boyd and Annabelle Neal were our two official delegates. Abby Welch was a leader in the youth meetings. Reverend Tracy Springberry represented us well and ministered to our needs throughout GA. And I participated as a volunteer and carried the Wolf banner in the banner parade and was generally, as you can guess, the curmudgeon of the group. GA starts with the opening session on Wednesday evening. This session is filled with music, inspiration, and the parade of banners. Nearly 600 banners, including our very own, carried by me with Abby and Annabelle, paraded through the hall following a New Orleans-style Dixieland street band. Thursday morning started with a daily rotation of worship, business meetings, followed in the afternoon by workshops and educational sessions, followed in the evening by some evening program. The GA this particular one was very unique, at least for the ones that I've been to, the five or so that I've attended, with the presence of three, not one, but three presidents who were appointed following the resignation of the Reverend Peter Morales and two other senior staff in March. The meetings were marked with a void. With the death of our beloved moderator, Jim Key, who succumbed to cancer on June 2nd. The meetings were moderated by Vice Moderator Denise Rimes and three other members of the Board of Trustees. This GA was billed as a social justice GA, one that would be similar to the one in Phoenix several years ago. In fact, last year in Columbus, we had to vote to suspend the bylaws so that this GA could be this special social justice GA. Unfortunately, in my opinion, it fell far short of its billing. As usual, GA was all about talk and not much action. The highlight for me was to serve for a third year as a volunteer. That's what this T-shirt is a volunteer T-shirt. So this was kind of my standard GA uniform. But I serve as a volunteer on the accessibility team. And our mission is what we call radical hospitality. We work with folks who are differently abled physically and mentally and or mentally to help make GA be the best experience it can be for them. We provided over 70 motorized mobility scooters for people with mobility issues. We also had wheelchairs, walkers, and canes. We had the main hall wired with a loop system so that people could use either their own hearing aids or headsets that we provided if they had a hearing impairment so that they could fully participate in all the sessions. We had large format hymnals and page magnifiers for those with vision issues. We escorted people throughout the convention center and helped them navigate the elevators and the different rooms and the different levels and different spaces. We braved the elements, the heat, the wind, and the rain to rescue people stranded in their hotels or in puddles of water. Those mobility scooters do short out if you drive them through high water. And we were there for people who were overwhelmed by the experience, who needed a refuge from the sea of chaos that is GA. My favorite evening service, and it was the evening services and the morning worship that kept me going, but my favorite evening service is the service of the living tradition. It is a time of honoring and remembering the ministers and the other religious professionals who dedicate their lives for this movement. The service of the living tradition also includes a sermon, and this year it was presented by the Reverend Cheryl Walker, who is the minister at the UU Fellowship of Wilmington, North Carolina. And I want to share with you some words from Reverend Walker's sermon that inspired me to come away from GA with a renewed commitment to my faith and a continued fight for social justice. Reverend Walker began with the poem Another Mountain by Abiodun Oyewaye. Sometimes there's a mountain that I must climb, even after I've climbed one already. But my legs are tired now, and my arms need a rest. My mind is too weary right now, but I must climb before the storm comes, before the earth rocks and an avalanche of clouds buries me and smothers my soul. And so I prepare myself for another climb, another mountain. And I tell myself it is nothing. It is just some more dirt and stone. And every now and then I should reach another plateau and enjoy the view of the trees and the flowers below. And I am still young enough to climb and strong enough to make it to the top. You see, the wind has warned me about settling too long, about peace without struggle. The wind has warned me and taught me how to fly, but my wings only work after I've climbed a mountain. Later in the sermon, Reverend Walker said, go out and climb your own mountains. Speak your own truth. Make your own impact. Make a difference. This is what we who call ourselves Unitarian Universalists are called to do. We are bound together by an abiding faith in the power of humanity to transform the world. We're bound together by the belief that with these proverbial hands, we can build a future for ourselves and those not born yet that is better than the world we inherited. We are bound together by the knowledge that together, each of us, unique and valued for our differences, can make the dream of a world peace and justify that as a reality. In her benediction, Reverend Walker concluded, "Our covenantal faith requires each of us to make vows. Vows to our faith, vows to each other, vows to humanity, vows to the God of our understanding. As we go forth, may we always remember the vows we have made, vows to use our hearts with compassion, to use our minds to be bold in our vision, to use our bodies to create the world we dream of. Let us strive to make a difference in this world, one person at a time, one moment at a time, to make the world better. And then do it all over again. Amen. Blessed be."
We live in a white supremacist culture. That was the overall theme at this year's General Assembly. And those were the words that they used. This was a change from, though related to, the original theme, as Patrick mentioned, of social justice. The shift in them was prompted by the events at UUA headquarters last spring. I'm not going to go into those. Suffice it to say that they resulted in the resignation of the UUA president and several staff members, and in the necessity to look at how we live our lives, how we live our values, I've given this idea considerable thought since my initial reaction was, well, gee, I'm sorry I was born white, but I really couldn't help it. While that's an understandable reaction, there isn't much I can do with it except be defensive that I was born white. So where is something useful here? Where I am right now is the understanding that the culture I live in and may not always be aware of puts me above others in the culture simply because I'm white, not to mention male. I didn't have anything to do with that either. For example, I am more or less at ease anywhere I go in this culture. I can go into any restaurant in the country and be confident that I will be served without question. I never even think about it. That's just the way it is. For people of color, that is not the case. They are, more or less, ill at ease anywhere outside of their own little enclave. Passing laws to make discrimination illegal don't really address that. They can also be served at any restaurant in the country, but on an individual basis, they're much less sure of that than I am. Once again, this is not a conscious thought, but more of an underlying fear. I don't know how well I'm describing this. I'm mostly trying to give you a sense of how different the two worldviews are. So the real question is, what can we do about it? For starters, there's no quick way to change a culture. I have to keep reminding myself that my reaction to someone may have more to do with the culture I live in than with everything I learned without even knowing I was learning it, rather than what I really believe I have to remember that other people simply don't see the world the same way I do. That was the first part of my talk, which was the theme. The second part that I want to talk about, and actually, as I was writing this, it occurred to me, this sort of answers my questions, although it's really open-ended, was the Ware Lecture, which occurs on Saturday night at General Assembly. It was given by Brian Stevenson, a founder and the executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama. He's a widely acclaimed public interest lawyer who has devoted his career to helping the poor, the incarcerated, and the condemned. In his talk, he gave us clear direction on the work that must be done to create a more just world, including fully accepting our history as a racist society. One of the points he made that I didn't actually include here was that in Germany, they make public recognition of the Holocaust. In South Africa, they make public recognition of their past. We don't. There's no public recognition of our own past as a segregated society, a slave-owning society for some of us. Dr. Stevenson gave us four essential steps to creating a more just and equal world. Get proximate to the poor, the excluded, neglected, and abused. And my understanding of proximate in this case is close to. If you actually get to know someone, it's a little harder to hate them or dislike them. Change the narrative that underlies racism and other inequalities. It's not because they're something, it's because that's the way our culture is, that's the way we unconsciously learn to be. Stay hopeful about creating justice and be willing to do uncomfortable things. For example, standing up in front of you folks. Through the personal stories he told around those four points, he showed us how we could start making that culture change that I mentioned earlier. And finally, one of his favorite quote of mine from him is, "The opposite of poverty isn't wealth, it's justice."
Can you hear me now? Am I on? Okay. No, okay, I can hear me now too. This is my GA uniform. This is what the choir wore when they performed. This is my uniform like that. It's Patrick's uniform. I can't get that microphone low enough to use it and turn pages, so there it goes. General Assembly is summer camp for grown-up Unitarians. Alexa, don't even point fingers at me. I'm finishing when I finish. To heck with that. Okay. Anyway. Joe and Patrick and I spent lots and lots of hours together at General Assembly. Yet, as you can see, each one of us came away with a very different set of impressions and conclusions. GA is so large and so grand and so ambitious in scale that it has to become a unique experience for each person. It's the hand on the side of the elephant situation. As Patrick has already told you, we arrived in New Orleans about the same time as Tropical Storm Cindy. I have never personally been in wind and rain that heavy and that fierce. If Patrick hadn't been holding on to me for dear life, I'd probably still be wrapped around a lamppost in New Orleans right now. The only thing positive that came out of the experience of a tropical storm, however, was that I now have a really cute new raincoat. GA is made up of equal parts of business, learning, and music and worship. Business meetings. If you come away from GA on an emotional high like you have never experienced in your life, if your experience was so positive and life-affirming, you do not have one critical thing to say about GA, I can almost guarantee you did not attend a business meeting. You've already heard the special challenges of GA due to both the resignation of Peter Morales and the very untimely death of moderator Jim Key just 18 days before the assembly began. Certainly the business meetings suffered from Jim's absence. Jim was a consummate professional. He was unflappable, patient, compassionate, thorough, very versed in the fine details of Robert's Rules of Order, which is an absolute requirement for a UUA moderator whose primary job at GA is to preside over all of the business meetings. The team of three UUA board members who were pressed into service in Jim's place, which we endearingly refer to as the tri-mods, understandably struggled with their task throughout the week. GA business meetings are where much of the decision-making for the denomination gets done. It's where our fifth principle, the one about democratic process, comes into play. The way Robert's Rules of Order function creates a contentiousness that seems to plague our business meetings. It creates winners and losers, and that is neither good nor productive. It was mentioned by one of the tri-mods that some discussion has been going on about whether Robert's Rules of Order is really the best way for a faith community to be making its decisions. I hope that something comes of this discussion and that in the future we will see a change to our denomination's decision-making process. Learning. Afternoons at GA were devoted to learning. Workshops, lectures, panel discussions, presentations of every sort, all built around the interests and concerns of UU individuals and congregations. This year there were tracks where there would be a number of programs on one subject in such areas as activism and organizing, faith formation, music, racial justice, stewardship, and UUA governance. The session I attended that moved me the most was entitled The Big Easy / Real Life. It was presented by Patty Cameron and Rosemary Bray McNatt. Patty is, among other things, the longtime leader of the GA accessibility team that Patrick is so very much a part of. Rosemary is the president of Starking Seminary. These two amazing women, from very different places and backgrounds, have a common vision. That vision is to do all they can to help New Orleans families displaced by Hurricane Katrina to return home. Excuse me. Yes, this work is still going on in the present day. New Orleans is still missing over 90,000 of its citizens. Patty and Rosemary work with some of the most disadvantaged citizens in New Orleans, those living in the Ninth Ward, who are nearly all persons of color, many of them living in still damaged houses. Patty has led 50 work party teams to New Orleans since 2005. She says the primary difference between how her organization and other organizations work is that they never tell people what they have come to do for them. They ask people what they want done. It's a matter of respect. The most appalling thing that I learned during that session requires a little more hurricane history. Katrina wasn't the first time the levees protecting the Ninth Ward were breached. The levees failed in 1992 when Hurricane Andrew struck New Orleans. After that, lots of work was done to restore them. However, in 2005, those same levees were intentionally cut so the Ninth Ward would flood instead of the French Quarter. The irony is, the French Quarter flooded anyway. The Katrina death roll rose to over 1,500. The majority of those deaths occurred in the Ninth Ward. Music and worship. Music is woven into the very fabric of GA. The morning business meetings even start with music provided by the GA band. Yes, there is a GA band, and they are marvelous. If you're suddenly down in the middle, if you were suddenly set down in the middle of one of the song fests that start every worship service, you would think you were attending a camp meeting, shouting hallelujahs and clapping everywhere. That's probably not good for a microphone. Excuse me. The first big evening service, which was the service of the living tradition, always opens with the magnificent hymn, Gather the Spirit. It all culminates on Sunday when the GA choir, of which I'm a very proud member, performs at both the morning service and the afternoon closing ceremony. Actually, choir is my primary motivation for going to GA. Music brings people together in a way that seems magical. The magic is actually sheet music, written in the language that all singers understand. That enables 170 strangers rehearsing for only an hour and 15 minutes over a day for 4 days to produce two polished performances that, if I do say to myself, brought the house down. It's a pleasure and an honor to sing with that choir. My final verdict about GA is already looking for hotel rooms in Kansas City.
Okay, we're going to answer questions.
All right.
Thank you, all of you. I would like to hear from any or all of you, what exactly happened at UUA to cause Peter Morales to resign, and including the three upper echelon members, and what was the result of these resignations?
So none of us know for sure what happened. The events were that a hiring decision was made by the director of congregational life for the Southern Regional Director. He said, she said, lots of discussion about that. But what we do know is that Reverend Dr. Morales was meeting with a group of people of color, and this whole issue came up, and he was pretty severely chastised about the decisions that were made and all of that. He responded to it with a couple of emails that he intended would be peaceful. They actually provoked. And as a result, one way or another, and we're not sure, he was no longer with the association. And then two others resigned right after him, or two others also left the association right after him. Various stories about what actually occurred. I think the upshot of all of this is that UUA will become different than we've known it over the years. And you can look at the composition of the Board of Trustees right now, and you can see the difference beginning. Most of the members of the board are 40 or younger. Women and people of color are represented fairly heavily on the board. And There's all kinds of studies and commissions that are in place to look at where we are and how we're going to move forward. So this is one of those where we are really in turmoil. And stay tuned.
Thank you. Patrick, I'd like to point out this is covered very extensively in New World, if you pick up recent editions of that.
It was also on NPR.
As time allows, Patrick, I'd like to have you elaborate a bit on what you said about there seemed to be more social talk rather than social action.
Yeah, so at Columbus last year, we voted to suspend the rules so that we could have this social justice GA. And part of that was we were going to cut down the size and the length of the meetings by removing the discussions for actions of immediate witness. What I experienced was that the meetings were not cut down. They were the same length or longer. And we simply jammed in more reports, more discussions, etc. There was no change to what we did in terms of social action. We had the Friday afternoon, marched off to a park, heard speeches, and we spent 2 hours. And that was it. Annabelle introduced the only other really active workshop, which was the workshop she attended was a preliminary to 50 people working in the Ninth Ward on Saturday. That was it. That was the action.
50 out of 4,000.
50 out of 4,000 and several hundred marched to hear a speech. That was the action. Everything else was talk. So that's why I said what I said. I don't know if you guys have any.
Did you guys discuss the elephant in the room? The Trump presidency?
The what? I'm sorry.
Trump.
No.
This was not about Trump.
No.
This is the GA.
Didn't come in.
So, well, I mean, were there discussions about it held informally? Sure there were, but this Unitarian Universalism is in such a period of change that most of what we discussed was what are we doing, where are we going, and also, as Joe very eloquently pointed out, it was about white supremacy. It wasn't about Donald Trump. Donald Trump will go away. Our white culture is not going away. And that's what we really have to grapple with.
Joe, your presentation reminded me of some of the outward struggles that people are making around cultural change. You know, that they're in the South, there are all kinds of memorializations of the ideas and the actual Civil War. They're tearing down statues that memorialize the war and people who led the Southern armies. Flags are cut. The Southern flags are coming down, and I personally think that that's not going too far to struggle, but I think it will eventually help. On the other hand, I saw on the news the other night that people are looking at some of the cemeteries in the South that are full of buried Confederate States Army soldiers, Southern soldiers in the Civil War. And there's some movement to do something to get rid of what some people think is more memorialization of
the Civil War and slavery and the people who fought for that. Personally, I think that's going too far. I think with this whole struggle, there's going to be struggle, but there's got to be some compromise, because people's families, living people's relatives, ancestors are buried and memorialized in those cemeteries. That's what we do with cemeteries. So, and it's just part of the struggle, I think. But I think that would be going too far to get rid of or change, or I don't know how they do it, but that's it.
I'm not really sure I have anything. I'm more or less in agreement with, yeah, that probably is going too far. I think we ought to remain aware of our past.
One more question.
I understand there were three women that were up for the post of Morales. Was that something you guys voted on?
Yeah, we voted for...
Okay. What can you tell us about our new...
We definitely voted on that. I'll speak to that, yeah. Oh, I don't have to stand there, do I? There were three, in my opinion, highly qualified women that ran for the office of GA president. I believe any one of them could have served very well. I'm glad that one did. Her name is Susan Frederick Gray. She is... been serving a church in Arizona, in Phoenix. She has a young son and a husband. And I don't know if they'll all be moving to Boston or not, but Susan has a very, very hard job on Sunday morning to stand up and tell about the mugging.
Tell about the what?
The mugging. And she handled herself beautifully. I think she's up to the job.
You said president of the GA.
No, president of the UUA. Yes.
And actually, one of the high points for me, in a way, was I think it was Friday night, was the candidates forum.
It was.
Where each of the three candidates made a 2-minute or a 5-minute talk, and then they had questions for them, and a 2-minute each. Then each one did a 2-minute wrap up, and that was.
Everyone was behaved very well. That's what I am trying to get with. It was real civil. It was more than civil. It was these women are known to each other, and you know, I, as far as I'm concerned, when one of them wins, they all win.
Mm-hmm.
They're lovely, lovely people.
Annabelle, Patrick, and Joe. A big hand for our speakers.